Jayama. So today we touch upon a very important aspect of education, which the mother has termed as vital education. And why it is very important? Because vital education has something to do with the formation of character, which is so important in our life. And yet it is most neglected almost everywhere, because the whole stress is on mind, little bit on the body, but the vital is missing. So just to place in context what really is the vital, so let's take a car. So there is a body of the car, which is equal to the physical. And then there is in the car a whole, you know, driving system fed through whatever means. So that driving system which is fed into the car, the engine which will drive it, responding to the whatever mechanisms are there, processes are there, is like the mind. And ultimately the driver who has to sync with that. But there is something called as the fuel. Without the fuel you can't go. So vital basically refers to two things. One is the energy, which is the driver of human beings. Now this energy takes certain forms. We can look at it purely as a form or a movement, psychological movement, or we can look at it as energy. Primarily it is the driver. What does it mean? For example, why do human beings do what they do? So there are people who say that, well, yoga is about going beyond desire, but if there is no desire, how will I act? So you have to remind them, plenty of actions in everyday life are done purely mechanically. There is a vital energy which is inbuilt in the system. Try saying, I will have no desire, I will not act, see how your body will become restless. So there is an energy which is driving just the physical world, physical consciousness, even the planets which are moving and the universe is expanding, is all because of prana. So vital energy is everywhere, even in matter it is there. Even mind is there in matter, but right now we'll focus only on the vital. Then, are we acting only for desire? No, there is love. Love may be mixed with desire or may not be mixed with desire. So it is another source of energy. There is the will for knowledge. That's another kind of sacrifice. So there are so many other kinds of driving impulsion within human beings. So this energy primarily is from three particular sources, and it's very interesting. Symbolically, I'm just, you know, it's very interesting that there was a time, for a long time, we were having petrol and diesel and things which have come from the bowels of the earth. So what are, how is this fuel formed? It's called as fossil fuel. So the trees which have died and other things which belong to the past, they are dead and buried under layers after layers, and that out of that this fuel comes out. What are these trees which have died? These trees had once drawn energy from the sun and were living, and now they are dead, but they are still replenishing fuel. It has lot of repercussions. From fossil fuels we graduated to electrical, and from electrical we are now talking about the solar. There are many other forms of energy. I am talking only about the car. So basically in any physical system, any mental working, there is this energy aspect, and it's so important to understand. So nowadays world is talking about clean energy, solar energy. What about the human driving system? So if you use these fossil fuels, you create a lot of pollution. Now people are beginning to recognize. So desire is like that. So desire will accomplish things. Desire, ambition, even fear drives people. Now, but these are like those energies which can be equated to petrol and diesel. They will push you, kickstart you, but you will keep needing to replenish them, and it throws a lot of pollutants in the air. Coal is another example of this. Then what about electrical energy? Electrical energies are mind driven, like the skies of the mind in darkness you have these lightning. So there is electrical energy, which means your mind, mental energy starts driving your system. It has its own place. And then beyond the mind, there is pure source of energy in the spiritual domains. So right from the spiritual, the energy goes down into the subconscious. Some draw the energy from the subconscious, like the asuras. They get a lot of it. Just see, look at this recent Pahalgam. How these terrorists, they have climbed, decided to attack. They climbed a whole 2 day incline, 2 days incline. They have climbed. They took 2 days to rest on the way and incline, and then they reached that spot. Why? Because when you are running away, it will be easier for you to run away. So look at how this this energy which has driven them, very dark motive, very dark. So there is that kind of energy also which is there, and there are higher and higher forms of energy. The higher your energy is, the more refined it is, the better it is for yourself. The engine will work better, and for the world it is much better. So therefore refining the vital is so important. So vital consists of two things: vital education, refining, and second is changing the character. Both are interconnected with each other. So this is the subject, and it's never taught. Why it's not taught? Because utilitarian, refining the character, art, drawing, music, painting, which are meant to refine. Most people take it that you can't earn money. So this idea of money. So you won't earn money if you engage in art, drawing, painting. So this is how people have ignored this whole side. And the result is we can see. I keep on saying in hardcore Islam, there is no place for music, no place for women, no place for singing, no place for art, culture, whatever it is. There is another line of Islam which is now dying or almost dead. But that's what hardcore Islam is about. And just imagine, it makes you more and more crude, more and more crude. Because refined vital will not do certain things simply because it is refined. And connected with that is character. Now here the modern saying goes that, well, you can't change one's character. One is born with a certain character. And people also draw slokas from the Gita that how will coerce and help. They pick up selectively. Many such things are there, because that's a different subject. Gita is not talking of outer character. It speaks of the inner impulsion, which is swabhava. Now that's a different story altogether. So these are the two big blocks in vital education. And third very important thing, which is completely missing in schools and in homes even more, and that is training of the will. So totally missing. In school, the only training is that you have to do your homework. That's the only time your will is operating. Or in maybe physical education, you have to reach in time. That's the only thing. But as such, to train the will. And in home, it's like freedom to do anything you feel like. So the will has become very weak. So today you see that one of the challenges is that children are unable to resist all the various temptations which have now, in the name of freedom, all kinds of things have come up, because vital asserts that's my life, I want to govern it whichever way I want. So then quite naturally, as a result, there is a misconstrued idea of freedom and individuality, and therefore we see a lot of ills today because of this simple lack of vital education. So much so that a man may be very highly literate, I won't use the word education, he may be an MD in medicine or a DM, but he may be very crude in his life, in his expressions, in his dealing with people. I have seen such people, I am sure all of us have seen, because the vital is not educated. So we can imagine a society where there is lack of vital education. You may have degrees, but you will remain a barbarian. And Shobindo has spoken at length about it. He has spoken about economic barbarism. And typical example I give is that, you know, with the collusion of the mind, what is really this kind of barbarism? You go to a branded showroom, you pay 5,000 rupees to pick up something which has been, whose manufacturing cost is maybe 250 or 300. And why it becomes expensive? Because a brand is put, and people don't even know it's a franchisee actually. There is no factory of these people. It's built somewhere, they put a stamp. For putting a stamp, people charge huge amount of money, and very little is passed on to the people who have actually worked. So I for one keep advocating it, and this is another platform. Please don't buy branded clothes. It means you are encouraging deceit, you are encouraging stealing, theft, you are encouraging all kinds of economic barbarism, because that's how it is. Doesn't matter, even little bit quality, don't worry about it. Clothes are not meant to last forever. So this logic. So anyway, so this an aside. So we come to the subject of vital education. It's very interesting, important, indispensable for a healthy society, for a healthy human being. So the mother says in the very beginning, it's very difficult and yet the most indispensable. It's the most important part of education and yet it's the most indispensable. Yet it is rarely taken up and pursued with discernment and method. And why? Because of two difficulties, ideas. One is that the chief aim of life is to be happy. The other is that one is born with a certain character and that it is impossible to change it. So Vital says, I just want to be happy. It doesn't matter. So even if you become, let's say, a doctor, you may be a, sorry to say, my own community, but you know, you may be a pickpocketer because you are doing it with decency, that's all. So you are getting all kinds of, because your aim is to be happy, for which you need money and external objects, so you don't mind doing it. And it gets so much into the system that people justify. It applies to every profession. So here she says something very interesting. The first idea is a childish deformation of a very profound truth, that all existence is based upon delight of being. And without delight of being, there would be no life. That's true. There is a push from inside, the joy of life, zoo de vivre, which pushes human beings. And it is known that even the lifespan depends a lot on this joy of life and the will to live. So even when there are people in the ward who are sick and seriously sick, one of the things we see is whether there is the will to live and the joy of life. So people often ask, why should a person live? Is there something he's looking forward to? So all these things are important. But this is a deformation. But this delight of being, which is a quality of the divine and therefore unconditioned. This is the difference. Delight doesn't require any condition. Like children. They're just simply happy. They don't know that I need money. My father is poor. He is rich. Actually, you see this comparison. We know we grew up in typical middle order family. We didn't think about it at all. We were so happy. Playing whatever came your, from gilli danda to, you know, marbles and come back. You don't know what is hotel, you don't know what is what, and you're very happy, very naturally happy. But then the vital has created a world of artificial glamour and given you a false sense of happiness. And therefore people think that by objects they can become happy. But the delight of existence is unconditional. It is there. You discover it is there, wherever you may be. You are inwardly in a state of delight. So this is the delight. It must not be confused with the pursuit of pleasure in life, which depends largely upon circumstances. The conviction that one has the right to be happy leads, as a matter of course, to the will to live one's own life at any cost. See, she has touched the, you know, hit the nail on the head, where the civilizational problem lies. And so live life at any cost. This attitude, by its obscure and aggressive egoism, leads to every kind of conflict and misery, disappointment and discouragement, and very often ends in catastrophe. Meaning thereby, we have forgotten two things on which, let's say, once Indian civilization was built. I keep speaking of that. If you ask two characteristics of Indian civilization from all that I have read earlier, so it is built on these two things, tyag and tapasya, renunciation and sacrifice. It just inbuilt as we grew up. Typical Indian mother, I'm sure all mothers do it, but typical Indian mother will think of herself last. She will think of the child, she'll think of everyone, she will make sure, you know, everybody has had. Then she'll be the last one to think about. It's the way it was inbuilt. And this, of course, women have carried that, but even all the great sages saying, this is the basic teaching. Now, this renunciation is not external, but inwardly. If you have something, you take joy in it. But if you don't have, you are not craving for it. So, this tyag and tapasya totally missing, because one has to be a go-getter. In the world of as it is now, the goal of life is not to secure personal happiness, but to awaken the individual progressively to the truth consciousness. So if we can instill in the child that, you know, goal of life is to progress. And the more you progress, the happier you will be. By default. And if you don't progress, whatever happiness you will get, you will lose it. So you see a typical lifestyle of people who depend on external objects to be happy. They want more and more. They want to keep changing. They want to, you know, earn more money to get new things, new vehicles, new dresses, new parties, people. Because you constantly need it from outside. Because pleasure is like that. You get it and you lose it. The second idea arises from the fact, the second idea is about change of character, that a fundamental change of character demands an almost complete mastery over the subconscious and a very rigorous disciplining of whatever comes up from the inconscient. Now this what comes in from the inconscient is basically it comes through heredity. You can't help it. A lot of problems come like that. And they come also from the inconscient of the the civilization in which you are grown up and, you know, the world which is around. So all that is embedded in the subconscious of the people, race around. The importance of sanskar, that's what it meant. So when that is missing, all this is like a big mass. Habitually it grips the mind and makes us think in certain ways. And it's very difficult to undo it. So I remember one story which was like, mother once asked someone that, you know, hand me that book, and he was carrying flower vase. So what he did was he transferred the vase from the right hand to the left hand and then picked up the book and gave to the mother. And mother said, why did you do it? So the person said, no, mother, it's not good to give by the left hand. She said, why? Then she made him give with the left hand. So that, see, it's a deformation again of a truth. Dakshina, right action. But right action has nothing to do with your right hand. But that's how it, the dakshina changes into, simply by giving from the right hand, whatever your motive is, it becomes correct action. So this is how some people often do this, no? Hold the left, that okay, from my whole being. All these things come from an atavism. Only an almost abnormal growth of consciousness and the constant help of grace can achieve this Herculean task. So people don't try even changing of character. You'll often hear this refrain, oh, his father was also like that. Oh, his mother was also like that. Poor fellows. You know? They are gone, but maybe we can change. That, I believe, is also the story of Bhagirath. That how he brings the Ganges and undoes the formations of the past. Because his great-grandsire had those 60,000 children who were horrible children. And eventually, you know, they died due to Kapil Muni's, wrath or whatever. They were disturbed. And then constantly three generations engage in a tapasya. So there is a truth behind this. It's not easy because you require a tremendous grace, but it can be done. So what is step one? Let's come step by step. First is a detailed and discerning observation of the character. It's such a, first thing if you we take is that whatever I think, whatever I feel, whatever I do is correct. This first fallacy. Second is everybody else should think, feel and do like me. Otherwise they are wrong. So you see how conflicts come. So we presume that my default system is the right one. No. Even behind actions which seem to be good, there may be dark motives and even vice versa. That's the strangest part. So one has to look into the inner motives, discern what is that motive which is driving one to act, look at the actions themselves, speech, so many times, especially I have seen people hastily say things. I myself got, it can have a very disastrous impact on someone. So many times you constantly grow that, this I should not have spoken. This word, this sentence, has it helped anyone? No. It has harmed. And it has harmed me, it has harmed somebody else. And yet constantly there is a justification. I said this because of this. So all self-justification hinders a true understanding of oneself, because what other person is doing is not my concern. He may have been very rough, he may be the worst person on earth, how does it matter? I'm not saying that that is true, because all our assessment judgments are totally colored. And so many examples I have seen in my own life, I am sure people know. Simply by the dress we assess and judge a human being. It's no worse and no better than, you know, assessing people by color. As bad. Somebody is wearing a certain dress, oh, so nice. If you wear a sari and bindi, you are wonderful. And if you have a sindur ka tika, then you are the, you know, ultimate paragon of virtues. And if you are wearing a, you know, what modern youth wear, oh, such a bad person. This is all mindsets. And we have to get rid of all this and look behind appearances. So this is one of the challenges. So detailed and discerning observation of the character. Detailed. Sometimes it may be a gesture. It may be a, as I said, this is one of the commonest arrow shot through the mouth. The worst is you can't take it back. You can't do anything. You may say after that, I'm sorry. I'm, you know, so always keep in your account a substantial amount of sorry in any relationship. Say 100 times and say, please keep deleting from my account. Tell me when 50 is crossed. And courage to admit one's mistake. What is there? We are human beings. We all make mistakes. It should be from the heart. Not merely that I'm really sorry I had to. This happened. It requires a great courage. And honesty. After all. We all can. It's the sign of nobility of temperament. Greatness, if you want to look at it. So, it is that everyone possesses in a large measure, and the exceptional individual in an increasing degree of precision. Now something very interesting she is revealing. Two opposite tendencies of character in almost equal proportions, which are like the light and the shadow of the same thing. Oh, this is very interesting. Shadow. Thus someone who has the capacity of being exceptionally generous will suddenly find an obstinate avarice rising up in his nature. The courageous man will be a coward in some part of his being, and the good man will suddenly have wicked impulses. And this is nature's occult arrangement. Even sometimes in your own life, you will see people who are connected with you who may bring out the worst from you. And there are people who will bring out the best from you. And if you take an account of these two people, I've had this so many instances. Somebody will say, Bhaiya, don't believe this man. He impresses everybody, but I know what he is, what kind of a monster he is. So I just smile and laugh. Equally with a lady, oh, she is very nice when she is with others, but I know what she is. So this is an occult arrangement which is necessary. It's like a mirror. The world is like a mirror. So we should always have people around us who can show us this mirror. That's why the worst kind of people from progress point of view are those who are surrounded by admirers and flatterers. That means God has given up on you. He's decided that, look, no progress for you. But if you really are destined for progress, you will find yourself surrounded by people who will be like a constant criticism. Look at Sri Aurobindo and the mother. They didn't spare. So when people often say so and so was, even recently after the Pahalgam attack, they say, we don't like if you criticize. Some people were getting defensive. I said, don't worry, I am in good company. Sri Aurobindo, the mother, Sri Krishna, Sri Rama, Jesus Christ, none of them have been spared, so it's okay. But yes, criticism should be seen to help us understand that is there something really problematic within me, and that's how we should use this criticism. Otherwise, just ignore it. So there are people who bring out your worst, and there are people who bring out your best. And in the balance of the world, both are needed. So she says, and it helps us. Why? Because All life is an education, and if the circumstances and the environment are favorable, the light will grow at the expense of the shadow. Otherwise, the opposite will happen. So we don't know behind Angulimala and Anand is hidden. Behind Ravana, a bhakta of the Lord is hidden. So we don't know when the change. It's a question of circumstances, destiny, very many things, that the worst comes out sometimes. Midway people change sometimes, you know. And often people say that this child was so nice till this age, and what overtook. And all this because the shadow is hidden inside. So this is one part. So two aspects which are principal about vital education, a few others. So first is about the sensory development, sense organs. The second, the progressing awareness and control of the character, culminating in its transformation. So why senses are important? Senses are important because aesthetics has a lot of role to play in refining the vital and character. Those who do not have a sense of beauty in everything, whether it be touch, sight, sound, and of course speech, their consciousness becomes more and more crude. They don't even realize that they are being crude. And mother has used this word, that in speech particularly, if you are using abusive language, it's like spiritual suicide. So senses are the first means through which we develop the aesthetic sense. After all, they are the conduits of beauty and delight. But this has been completely distorted and falsified today. So you'll see all kinds of music, art forms, which is so dark, ugly, literally. You see a horse's head is here, or maybe half a head, and then you will see an arm coming out from somewhere, and a box little, and you have to keep interpreting it. But that's not how it should be. You can interpret, you can convey things beautifully. You don't have to distort the images in trying to improvise upon nature. You can improvise, but it should be beautiful. So this is where we see that aesthetic sense is so important. And listening, sound, beats of sound, which is a beautiful harmonious sound, but the kind of music that is invaded, the kind of even tattoo art. Tattoos are okay, but the kind of tattoos which come up of all the things, scorpion and, you know, a cobra suddenly. I mean, put something nice. Tattoos have been a very ancient thing. I mean, people used to put the name of their husband, but that was because you were not supposed to take the name of the husband. In India, tattoo culture was there. So if they ask you, what is the name of your husband, you will either say, Chunnuka Papa. Or you just say, look at this. Also, of course, if you get unconscious, there were no identity cards. But again, this kind of a crude aesthesis. So she says about this vital education, the cultivation and of discrimination and of aesthetic sense. The capacity to choose and adopt what is beautiful and harmonious, simple, healthy and pure. And mother said that one of the handiwork of the Asura is in India has been to shun beauty, all aspects of beauty. That is so true. And you can see from the way decor in a house, and of course, if you don't have means or money, it's a different thing altogether. All that speaks, those are vibrations which affect us. So the external sense of beauty, especially with the sannyasi kind of tendencies and ascetic kind of life, we have completely become oblivious to the sense of beautiful. And that makes a character very crude. And then she says, for there is a psychological health just as there is a physical health. A beauty and harmony of the sensations as of the body and its movements. The same truth expressed in vulgar language. I don't know, people, some of these stand-up comedies, except one odd person, all of them as if vulgarity, and it's regarded as the in thing. And people fight over saying that freedom of speech. Well, if this is freedom of speech, then fine, then you have decided that world should go down and down the hill. So there have to be people to convey, whether human beings listen or not, that's a different thing. But your freedom is destructive to the world because you are letting off those vibrations, very harsh, hard. And I remember once in BHU when I studied for 1 year. So they came to know that I write Hindi poetry and just after 11th standard. Because they asked my hobbies, I said I like love to write in which language? Hindi. So Benares, na? So they showed me one of those magazines with half-clad lady. And they said, describe her. So now it's a test. So they didn't know that my Hindi is really good. So I used such chaste words that they never knew that it can be. So I said, what have you told? I said, I have told you Shuddha Hindi. So for example, when you have to describe the pelvis, I said, Kati Pradesh. So, that's the original. Then they said, okay. Because they were expecting some vulgar words, I must say, or some very... Narke said, no, you can describe things beautifully, thanks to Kalidas. That you develop that even aesthetic sense in speech. The same thing you can convey, but express it beautifully. So, Satyam Vada Priya. And it should also be not harsh to the ears, not harsh to the aesthetic sense. So, this is... Aesthetic sense is so important that even Sri Aurobindo in his first play... Harmony of Virtues. He says, if you have to understand morality, you have to develop the sense of beauty. There is two kinds of morality. One is very harsh morality. Thou shalt not do this. If you do this, your hands will be chopped. Now, this morality is so disturbing. Now, you see, people will not do it. But what you have done, you have made the consciousness extremely crude and vulgar. Whereas there is another kind of beauty which mother would ask when children would consult here. Do you think it's the right thing? And you see, here is the sense of the beautiful. Was this action beautiful? Slapping somebody, aggressively throwing abusive words, is it beautiful? So this sense of the beautiful is so important, and she speaks about that. Artistic taste and refinement to power and precision. This should be a true aesthetic culture. In Greece, you see ancient Greece, how much thing, even on the physical level, because any aesthesis, any kind of art, it helps. Which will protect him from degrading influences. For in the wake of the last wars, now why this is happening, she has described that also. Shobindra has also spoken of that. In the wake of the last wars and the terrible nervous tension which they provoked as a sign, perhaps, of the decline of civilization and social decay, a growing vulgarity seems to have taken possession of human life, individual as well as collective, particularly in what concerns aesthetic life and the life of the senses. So this is important that these children must be educated. Elders must be educated. The kind of language they use, what is called as, I don't know, bad words or abuses. It's a horror. I don't know. They don't feel anything. That it's something truly very degrading. So all that children have to be right from beginning, and parents have to first learn. Most of the parents themselves are like that. For one who has developed a truly refined taste will, because of this very refinement, feel incapable of acting in a crude, brutal or vulgar manner. This refinement, if it is sincere, brings to the being a nobility and generosity which will spontaneously find expression in his behavior and will protect him from many base and perverse movements. So basically it means that any school... Please give lot of emphasis on art, poetry, drawing, painting, anything. And genuinely, not just for marks or for formality. Because that's going to refine him into a good human being. So then, she says something still further. What about controlling by external means? Generally, all disciplines, now comes the character. One is that refine the character. Second is mastery. So she says, generally all disciplines dealing with the vital being, its purification and its control, proceed by coercion, suppression, abstinence and asceticism. These are the four means. Force. No, you don't do this. This bad, this wrong. No, society doesn't approve it. So all kinds of external pressures. This procedure is certainly easier and quicker, although less deeply enduring and effective than a rigorous and detailed education. Besides, it eliminates all possibility of the intervention, help and collaboration of the vital. And yet this help is of the utmost importance if one wants the individual's growth and action to be complete. One example which I know, commonly 15, 16, 17 people fall in love. And if people, teachers come to know what is the standard thing, is this the age to do these things? And then there is like, you know, at home also something very similar. And then the child suppresses the movement. He never learns what is love. Whereas the right approach should be that, okay, you are in love. What do you mean by love? One of the things that can be taught to, especially boys, for example, when they love someone, that can you really take care of the girl? Do you know how to take care of the girl? And this should be part of the education, that, you know, love is a word which can be very cheap, but it can be very profound. So to teach children, instead of suppressing and coercion, because this is a dimension of the being. And people often say, when you have finished your studies, then you think about it. So what happens? That energy takes all kinds of devious and deviant routes. Or when the time actually comes, by then you see that people have, they don't know, so they end up totally mismanaging this whole power. So the child must be taught to observe, to notice reactions and impulses and their causes, to become a discerning witness of his desires, his movements of violence and passion, his instincts of possession and appropriation and domination, and the background of vanity which supports them, together with their counterparts of weakness, discouragement, depression and despair. So especially with a single child, one of the only, I am not suggesting by any means having two children. Single child is right for today's age. But what happens, what the single child doesn't learn is to give. Some children learn it because parents are like that. But many children, and often you'll see, parents very laughingly, they will say, oh, he will not give his car to anybody. He will not, this is not a healthy thing. He will not give his share to anyone. And they laugh at it. Yes, but when the child grows up, he may tell you, parents, that I am not going to give anything of mine to you. So this again, that tyag and tapasya, to learn to give, a generous outlook, generous nature, they will learn from parents, but also they have to also be trained in doing it. Initially they may feel pained, but slowly in many of us Indian homes, I remember growing up as a child, we had a worker who was working, that time you would call servant. But it was always taught to us that whatever comes in the house has to be shared with that person. And it was taught in a different way that, you know, nazar, like he will feel, because he will also feel like eating. He won't be able to say, by whatever comes, I mean eating, not like you get everything. So he will naturally throw certain vibrations of maybe greed, unhappiness, and they are going to affect. So it was taught to us that, you know, things have to be given. Another simple way it was ingrained in Indian psyche was that when food is being prepared, it was, oh, the food is ready, let's pounce upon it. So it was like first chapati will go to the cow. The second will go to the crow. It was such a joy. Lot of cows were around, but you know, you search for that particular cow which you have developed a bond with, then to the crow. The third will go to the dog. And then, yes, some offering, you have to put up nice thali. I have seen some Indian homes still do it. They will never eat, they'll make a thali and put it before whomever, God, everything little, little. So the child has to wait till everything is ready, and then it's placed before God and done whatever little puja, and then everybody can eat. So there also it was like, you know, little categories that first these people will eat. Now this is such a beautiful thing. Just to learn to wait. Now when Gottman says emotional intelligence is about delaying your gratification, then everybody is talking about it. But this is exactly a very simple way to learn to delay your gratification. And this is Buddhist teaching. Actually, you are going along the lines of Buddha. That if you have something which you can have and somebody else can have, and you just give it, it's a yoga. You may not use the word, doesn't matter. So this generosity, nobility, that certain things you cannot do, simply because, not because you are afraid, not because law will punish you, that the crudest way, but simply because they jar with a deeper sense within. Often I have appealed to people's this inner sense when they are separating and they are deciding who should get what. So one is by, technically and going. Another is, what does your heart say? You should be generous. That's it. So this is how one learns. If you are generous, actually anyways, universe will give you so much more. So this is where we have to learn. So she speaks about, evidently for this process to be useful, along with the growth of the power of observation, the will for progress and perfection must also grow. Like that boy who used to get angry and mother once told him, what is easier? Going and bursting out in anger or holding your hand and putting it in the pocket? So he says, going and blurting out is much easier. So mother asked him, do you want to do easy things or difficult things? I want to do difficult things. See that? So I'll hold it. So this ability to hold, withhold gratification, all this is part of the training, urge to progress. And another very important thing is the use of reason. So three things he speaks of: rational arguments, goodwill, and the sense of dignity and self-respect. So usually reason becomes a part which colludes with the vital. It justifies. So night out, parties, reason will give all kinds of justification. So reason has to be taught and trained to look at the vital aspects in a different way. Then goodwill. So it's like selfishness and goodwill, where you are not doing something to hurt somebody. That there are people so crude that they do things simply to hurt someone. I met people. And they use words like, to punish. Simply because they are angry or unhappy. So goodwill should be cultivated. It's okay. You may not like something about someone. Someone may have hurt you knowingly, unknowingly. But then you should harbor goodwill. And the third is the sense of dignity and self-respect. One of the things again that in Indian homes we were taught, and I'm giving these examples because these things we are forgetting now. Now the trend is different because a lot of things have come as contamination. One of the things was never ask money on udhar from anyone. And then the logic was that if I don't have the means, then, so we were taught this phrase, utna paav phailao jitna chadar hai. You stretch yourself, your feet to the extent that you have, that your bed cover length will allow. Don't stretch more. It has been practically so useful for me on airports when I sleep, when there is very little space. I remember this and sleep because only stretch that much as space allows. But that's that apart. That okay, if you don't have the means, you don't have to covet. Somebody else is fine. You can strive for the means, fine. That's understandable. But to borrow, never borrow money. And equally, never lend money. These two things were taught. So what if you have to give? Give, then forget. If you have given money, give it with this clarity that it may never come back and you're fine with it. So give only that much which you don't mind losing. But if you are giving with the idea of expectation, then it's a wrong movement also, because you are encouraging indolence in the other person. Sometimes you have to give. It's fine, understandable. But you should not be giving without discernment. Giving without considering the time, space, context and the person. The Gita says that kind of a giving creates darkness and delusion in both the giver and the receiver. So one should be careful about that, you know. So, and if you have to give for whatever reason, then it should be like, it's gone. And never take interest on money that has been lent. This is told in all scriptures. Money doesn't belong to us. If you have given, supposing, and the person at some point, what I would do if sometimes and people say, we will give you back. So my thing is, okay. I don't say yes or no. When the person is about to give, I may say, it's okay. I don't want to hurt their self-esteem. Because if you say, no, I am giving you, you don't have to, then you are hurting self-esteem. You are making the person feel low. If you have given, you have given. If the person says, I'll return, it's okay. Whenever you feel comfortable. In your mind, it is gone. Gone means in a healthy sense. You had little extra, somebody needed it, divine has provided, you have given. But to extract interest on it is horrific. So money lending on interest is never a good thing. A lot of people do it as a business, but that's their problem. So they are not into vital education or progress. And then finally she speaks about cultivation of will. Never forget, the will can be cultivated and developed just as the muscles can by methodical and progressive exercises. So she says there is a method and there is a progressive thing. You can't suddenly wake up one day and say, from today I will not have coffee. I have decided. Yeah, that was a joke. When someone says, I have decided never not to have coffee. So I asked for how many days? I don't know, did it continue? Oh, wonderful. So that's good. But with coffee it can work. So like someone, Kalyandai in Ashtam used to say, quitting smoking is very easy. I do it every day. So it is methodical, slowly. Some can do it in one go. And certain things you can do it. But go slowly, slowly. Eat a little sweet. But do it like instead of gobbling it up in 5 minutes, you take half an hour. People ask me, you are diabetic, why do you eat sweet? So I said, don't you notice that I take half an hour or 40 minutes? Some people think I am relishing. No, that's my training, exercise. So the point I am saying is that you should slowly, it need not be that one day I'll wake up and take a New Year resolution which will last till 4th January. Maximum. So there is a progressively methodical way it can be developed, like any exercise. You can't lift 100 kilo weight in one day. To sum up, one must gain a full knowledge of one's character without any denting, painting and covering. Oh, I am a very nice person. Everybody else is bad. If everybody else is bad, sure enough, you are full of all those things that you are seeing in everybody. That's certain. And if you are seeing everybody good, probably you have really become a bundle of goodness inside. Because we see in the world, it's like a mirror. So, to sum up, one must gain a full knowledge of one's character and then acquire control over one's movements in order to achieve perfect mastery and the transformation of all the elements that have to be transformed. And as we have spoken earlier, that this mastery can begin with a very simple thing. Be in time wherever you have to be. And be regular in whatever you are doing, you have decided to do. So of course sometimes people like me can overdo it. So if I have fixed a time that 5 o'clock I'll go to market. So 5 to 5 I get, you know, please come, it's getting late. So I have to be told, but we are going to market. It's okay. No, in my mind it's like 5 o'clock I should be. That's a bit too much. don't do that. But at least, if you have decided something, because see, if a person cannot be, I often say, if you cannot be true to your word, then who is going to trust you ever? So if you have given a promise, keep that promise. Try your best to keep that promise, unless things become really unmanageable. And that's something very beautiful. Similarly, regularity and punctuality, simple ways of disciplining yourself. Now all will depend upon the ideal which the effort for mastery and transformation seeks to achieve. The value of the effort and its result will depend upon the value of the ideal. See, this is so important. And that's what we need to understand. Many of the people, they will speak very nicely, they'll dress very nicely, they'll make you feel very special. But what is the ideal? Marketing. Be careful. Very nicely. They'll enter, "May I come in, sir?" And you're very impressed by his demeanor, his smile, and poor fellow has to smile all the time. And then he will come inside and sit quietly. Then he'll ask, "Sir, how's your day going?" I'm telling you a typical this thing. Then he'll take out a gift and keep on your table. Medical, I'm saying. "Sir, when is your anniversary?" You are my impressed, yaar. He knows he is thinking, "Oh, when is your birthday?" This. He is simply marketing. There is no, his eye is on your pocket, don't forget. Or on his pocket, how he is going to earn. So she says, you may practice all these things. But if your ideal is low, then you are like a vulture, strong bird flying, but the eye is on the flesh of meat which is on the ground. If that is the case, then you may do all kinds of things. Modern civilization, a lot of things are like that. People dress well, they speak well. Sometimes they don't understand what they have themselves spoken, and I have to ask, "What English are you speaking?" Suddenly they get shocked that they are using, what is it called? Another language, no? They began to speak that. And they just pick up thinking it's cool or it's like stylish. So you have to remind that this is not, you know, you don't have to speak like that to impress someone. So many things we do to impress people. Our many of the actions. So that is hypocrisy. That is show. That is sham. And in yoga, it will be torn apart. So accent. Yeah. So one has to be what one is within and outside. Yes, you should be neat, nice, clean. Everything is fine. But this where she says, if the ideal is low, all this effort has no meaning. There are people who work from morning till evening, and they say, "See, I am working so much." Why? Because you want to fill your pocket with grains of gold. So, well, you have mastered yourself. A lot of people do that. They'll get up in the morning at 4 o'clock and go for work and then come back late. But see, it doesn't help. So she's reminding, the value of the effort and its result will depend upon the value of the ideal. This is the subject we shall deal with next in connection with mental education. So what we are doing draws its value from why we are doing it. Chema.